Accession number 11071, rule 1.
This is Ivan Kudrenko, rule 1. And if I could ask you, first of all, Mr. Kudrenko, about your life before the war, were you living in the Soviet Union?
No, I was not living. I was born in Yugoslavia from my parents, Russian parents, Cossack parents, actually, who migrated after the revolution in 1920s to Serbia. And there I was, in 1924 I was born. My parents were the members of the White Guard Army, who fought the Bolsheviks from 1917. And then I was educated in Serbia, and in 1941, when the Germans, you know, 22nd of June, 1941, invaded the Soviet Union, in the same year, in October, was organized form Russian Corps to fight the communism actually anywhere, doesn't matter. During this time, and after the invasion of the Soviet Union, Tito came out, who was educated actually in Moscow by Stalin and so on. And with this corps, I was there with the corps from the start for a long period. Then I finished war by the finish of the 1945. I was joined by the 1st Cossack, actually it called the 1st Cossack Division, but later on it was built up to the 15th Cossack Cavalry Corps. That's the where how I came to Austria, when we retreat, actually.
From Yugoslavia?
From Yugoslavia, that's correct.
Yes. So would your war experience have been in Yugoslavia all through the war?
Yes. In Yugoslavia through the war.
Yes.
Fighting the Tito's partisans.
I imagine from what you have said about your family background that you would have been very anti-Bolshevik.
Oh, yes. I was educated since I was born. All Cossacks were anti-Bolsheviks. Actually, they were all 95% monarchist, you know, for the Tsar. They fought for the Tsar religion, fight in the country. Actually, if I may mention, our Tsar is related to the English royalty. And I was very, very educated because they told me the truth, what was and how it happened, you know. Actually, the communism is not Russian communism, it's international communism, as we know. Actually, the Russians didn't bring the communism to the world. It's Marx, Engels, and Lenin, and so on, you know. And I was very strong educated against the Bolsheviks because I know how the Russian, we got the newspapers, information from the Soviet Union, what's going on till that Second World War. We knew definitely what's going on in the Soviet Union. And one day, in 1941, before I joined the Russian Corps, where I was formed 1st Cossack Regiment, because Cossacks always went the first as volunteers. One day my mother called me and said, "Ivan, it's time." I didn't know what she meant. She said, "Stop studying. Time is coming to rescue the Russia and the Cuban Cossack land, you know, where I come from, the Cuban, from the South Russia." At first, I didn't understand what she meant. She said, "You must go and join the Russian corps." In Belgrade, is forming Russian corps. That's how I did listen to my mother. Well, and I joined it.
Would the Russian Corps have operated with Mikhailovich?
Yeah, we operate from the start because we are for kings, you know, because Draža Mihailović, General Draža Mihailović, he was on the king's side. Our king was, during the war, in the London. King Peter II, which I got a chance later on personally to meet and talk with him when he came to Australia. And Chetniks and our corps, Russian corps, were fighting together in the against the Tito, against the Tito's communism. We were very good with understood because same idea. You know, they fought it, Germans, and fought communism, Titoist. But Germans couldn't do nothing because anyhow we were fighting to get communism since the Tito. That was the whole very sad story with this betrayal because on the same happened with the Draža Mihailović. What's happened with us, with the White Army in the Russia during the Revolution. Our allies, England, America, France, and so, they left us halfway. They started before they helped us. Our soldiers, Russian soldiers, were wearing English uniform, you know, or the other uniform. But and halfway, they start to help the Bolsheviks. Help the Bolsheviks and help the White Guard, you know. And so, same story happened in the Second World War with the Draža Mihailović. The first Allied helped Draža Mihailović for about till, I would say, no, I'm not exactly correct, but sure, but I think it was till the 1943. Then they stopped it and started helping the Tito. Actually, and the Our King, I mean Peta, I call him Our King because he was actually Our King. And he was in London. And then what should they do? They were in such position, they fought the Germans all the time. Then they start to fight Tito when he come to the actually start to exist. They didn't have the weapons and nothing. This all supply, because as military and other supply, the England stopped to give it to Draža Mihailović. Actually, we helped them from the Russian corps with the weapons and so on. You know, we were all on the same way and fighting till the end, because the same destiny happened to them was happened to us before and during the revolution, which and we understood each other very, very well. Actually, we suffered our destiny the same way. We were later on betrayed.
But when you talk of being a Cossack, you seem very proud of this. Am I right in thinking that? Did you maintain that sort of Cossack identity in Yugoslavia?
Yes. The uniform and everything. Till today, I'm still... I got a uniform, Cossack saddles. After the war, when I escaped this massacre, I have formed in the Germany in 1946 Cossack riding troop, and we were riding around the Europe. Then when I come to Australia in 1949, I wanted to form there in West Australia also Cossack troops. But lack of the money didn't let me go. Actually, I might attend Cossack saddles. I got my old uniform Cossack. My father still I got uniform, sabres and so on. Very, very old heritage. Actually, and in my house, which I got in Melbourne, I got one gallery in my room. When you go, you can see that you are in Cossack land or in Russia. All pictures, all old, including the Tsar, is there, all Cossacks, generals and officers, high officers, white and later on, you know. And I got all the Lien's photos and so on.
So could I ask you now, that's all very interesting, and I think it's important to establish, you know, that you still had this identity. But could I ask you now, when you went into Austria, this would have been towards the end of the war. Could you tell me about that retreat in Austria and how you came to be in the camp?
It happens, of course, you know, the Red Army was pressing very hard from the East Front. We retreated from Yugoslavia, we retreated to the Austria to meet our ally forces, to the English or Americans, any of the allies, because they were our allies before. Of course, that was I would say, 15th or 17th, so we met them. May after the capitulation, we were there in the South Austria when they declared the capitulation to D-Day, so called, you know. And we were very happy to meet our old allies, because in our army, and the 50 cavalry corps, also were the, most of them old officers, tsaris from the Tsar's army. And they want to meet the old allies, the English. We never shoot no one bullet. We never fought on the English side, on the West. No way. We just have millions. Actually, army was all different army retreat with us. Dražen Mihailovic, Cossacks, Czechoslovakians, Hungarians army, and so many different things, Ukrainians, Domobrants from Yugoslavia, Romanians, Antonescu, they were retreating, all different. But most of them was refugees. It's millions of people all pouring to the West just to meet the allies. When we met them, we were very happy, you know. Then, on the 24, on 28th, we come to the place in Austria called Feldkirchen. That's the where we surrendered our weapons to the English, to the British. And
were you happy about that, surrendering your weapons? Did
you
mind?
To the British, because we thought we will be. Actually, for everybody, for all world, war was finished. But it wasn't not finished for us, because communism, Stalin, and the allies, they were good friends. And for us, still, from the 1917 till the end of the war, we've lost a battle, we can say, but we didn't lose the war. We still were at war with the communists, with the Bolsheviks. That's why we were very happy to meet our allies, English. And we were there. We surrendered, but didn't all officers surrender? They didn't ask us to surrender our pistols, you know, guns, machine guns, and so on. The Cossacks surrendered everything. That was a beautiful order there. We thought we were getting new weapons to fight again. You know how it was. Or in somehow our allies will one day send us somewhere else to live or to exist. Say from to Australia, where we were talking between ourselves, to Africa or even to South America somewhere. And we, our officers kept their pistols. Not all of them. Some surrendered. Depends where they ask you, you know. Actually, me and my other friends, officers, they didn't surrender. Till the camp, we come to the camp. There in Feldkirchen, I met my girlfriend Tanya from Belgrade, which one I didn't see her 1 year. I was surprised to see her. She was in the Red Cross. Sister. And this in Feldkirchen, She gave me my watch, which I gave her 1 year before when I was staying with the army, to take it to Belgrade for repairing, because my watch was stopping, and she gave it to me this time. I wanted to give her mine, but she said no, she got another one, lady's watch there. And on the 24th May, in the same place, we got the news that General Commander of the 15th Cossack Cavalry Corps, General von Panowitz, who was the German, he made one conference for officers. From our officers also, we once send them one major there, Major Troshin. We send him there to the conference. When he came back, he said, news to us, he said, British command offered me to leave you and to go to the German prisons of war camp. But he said, I fought with you together everywhere. I eat with you from the same plate. He said, I won't leave you. On this conference were present also British command representatives. And they said, we have a good talk, we are conference, we're conferring still with the British command, and everything is going good. So we still were living in some hope, you know. And on the 25th, we were given the orders next morning to shift in the place to the other camp, to shift place called Sirnitz. That means that we have to shift on 26th in the morning. We did shift it in 26, actually all Cossack from the Feldkirchen shifted there to this small place. Some, most of them in the mountains, you know, somewhere hooking. So, till we were there, till 27th, one day, a short couple days there, till 27th of May. On 27th of May, we got the orders next morning to be ready at 8 o'clock in the morning to go to the place called Weitensfeld in the prison of war camp. I had a truck, actually a van, big van, and with me were six more officers. Actually, seven of us, we sit in the truck and we went to the Weitensfeld. Of course, all Cossacks were on the horses and the, how you call it?
A sort of encampment, was it?
No, they were with the riding horses to the camp, because of the, we have to be to the camp. With the carriage, or how you call it, with the two horses.
Oh, yes, yes, I know. The horses were pulling
the
carriages, yes.
Yeah. But with the car, with actually car, as we call it, a truck, we can went faster, as faster. And about maybe 5 or 6 kilometers from this place where we were stopped by the British soldiers. That was the T-junction. I got out of the car, some officers also want to go out, he stopped them. It was three soldiers and one sergeant. He stopped him, he said, you stay there. He checked thoroughly everyone and so. When he checked everything, I saw on the ground a board and the arrow. Painted with a paint, ordinary paint on the board, and the arrow showed the written on the board Cossacks officers in the on English language. But I understood the straight why, because German and English is not much different. A couple of letters. I knew what I mean. Cossack camp there. When I looked on this side, I didn't see any camp, nothing. I saw some barracks, huts and so standing there, maybe 2-3 kilometers, maybe 4 or less. And behind them was the mountain. Then, maybe about 10 minutes, the sergeant said, he said, just shout, because we didn't understand the English language, how to go this way. That means there, where the arrow was pointing. When we come down, another soldiers stopped us and told us, and they were sergeant, very big one, I never forget him. Oh, he was the sergeant, got a gun on his belt and a button in his hand. We unloaded there, and I give the key to the soldier. When I give the seven of us officers, when I give him the key, they took the truck, actually, why? We were still, and they lined us up there by the barracks. One barrack was on the right hand. Actually, three sites were without wall, only the roof. The other were stored, couple rooms there on the other end. There were about 20 or maybe 30 soldiers and officers and so. That was the command of the camps, you know. But we still don't standing there. We were lined up and we were told to put everything in front of us. You know, suitcases, rucksacks and everything they had. Can you stop? Then we were told to surrender our pistols, guns, which we give it to them, and afterwards to go two steps backwards. When we surrendered our weapons, the sergeant major started to yell, to scream. We didn't understand what is it, because it was English language. Actually, he was getting mad, then he comes with a button and put a hands up of every officer. We should hold the hands over the head. Some protested as officers, what for? Then he get berserk and start to beat the officers on the hand. Then we knew what he means, to hold the hands up. Actually, we did it. When it is done, we hold everything on. Then he dropped a button on the ground, on the grass, and grabbed us to the hand, to each hand, grabbed us. Took the watches off and throw them on the ground. Further away. Then he starts searching, body searching. He took everything we had in the pockets, everything, you know, searched right through. When he finished with it, then on front of, he ordered the officer to, who already searched, to open the suitcase and to get out his things, which officer did. He took. Then he pulled everything off the suitcases, rucksacks, and he selected good stuff on the belt. He threw them further. What he mean does it not no good? He dropped there by the suitcase till he searched it properly right through. Of course, many think everybody had something very dear, you know, and so on. He searched the right. Next and next over, the same procedure. Searching, watch, first watch, then body, then the suitcase and rucksack. When he came to the third officer, Major Troshin, who was with us together, start to protest. He was the old Tsarist officer. He got a Cossack's
Epaulettes.
Epaulettes, and he got some on the chest few orders. How you call
the medals?
Medals, yeah. They call the medals there from Tsar because he was in World War One, then Revolution. Then he joined the in old age, joined the again to fight. He started to speak. He said in Russian language. He said they can't do that. According to the Geneva Convention, that's not allowed. And when his Sergeant Major, when he saw our Major speaking, he went mad. He was screaming on him. Then he put a button in his nose, then in his chest, and then shouted with the finger. He put his finger on the mouth, shouted to actually to shut up. So.
So that was a bayonet, was it, he pushed
no,
in?
No, not bayonet, button.
Button,
yeah,
I
button
guess.
What he had when he met him, when he had in the hand, just when we arrived. Then, of course, Major Troshin couldn't do nothing. Then he searched, and so on.
Were there many soldiers about?
No, English and British soldiers, yeah. When he was screaming, and with the button went to the Major, he was yelling, actually. He was mad, his Sergeant Major. Under the hat, which were only roof on it, no walls, there were about 30 British soldiers. And the officers, all different ranks, even to the colonels and so on. They were, some were smiling, some were laughing loud. Also. They were looking on us, what are you doing, Sergeant Major is doing there with us. Actually, we were all upset. How can so? We don't think that in the British Army, in any office, in any school, in the military school, or under officer school, or in the officer school, or even in the military academy, they don't teach the soldiers to beat the officers. No one. I saw myself personally when the German officers took the Yugoslavia and the Yugoslav officers, they wanted something for so on. They saluted. They saluted each other. That's the officer's etiquette, officer's honor.